Welcome to the Interviews Podcast.
Welcome, Interisti, to episode 132 of the Interviews Podcast, the official podcast of SempreInter.com. We are here for the post-match reaction of Inter Monza, which finished 3-2 to the hosts in an incredible Pazza Inter performance, which is very fitting because today is Inter's 117th birthday. Goals from Birindelli in the 32nd, Keita Balde in the 44th, Arnautovic in the 45th, Hakan Çalhanoğlu in the 64th, and a Kyriakopoulos own goal in the 77th minute. As always, I'm one half of your co-hosting duo, Alessandro Raffa, joined here by Gianmarco Paterno. Johnny, before we get into this game, and there's definitely a lot to talk about this game, it is Inter's birthday, so I figured we can kick off with a couple words about the club, maybe tell a story. We'll also read some listener submissions for how they became Interisti, and then go from there.
Nah, sounds great.
All right. So I'm going to read some stories here from Inter fans, but before I do, I just want to toss out a personal anecdote. So my Inter bloodline traces back to my grandmother, passed on to my father and to me. My nonna is no longer with us, but one of the core memories I have is in 2004, I believe, my aunt and uncle lived in Boston in a tiny apartment with the children. My nonna was there taking care of them while they went to school, and we were visiting. Sitting at the kitchen table with a tiny little TV watching Inter Perugia. And I remember, like, this was a team with Zé María on it and, you know, not necessarily the most star-studded team. But I remember just sitting there with my grandmother and, you know, just having a really nice moment watching the game with her. And there are those, like, little memories that we cherish forever. So, yeah, this club has been with me for as long as I can remember. Always going to support it. Always going to be, maybe not always going to be FC positivity, but normally going to try to be FC positivity about this team. And yeah, it's a big part of my life. There's a lot of memories. And yeah, love this club.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. My story is pretty similar. You know, my nonno had a trial with the academy. Or maybe not the, I don't even know if it was an academy then, but he had a trial. And after that, he just fell in love with the club himself, passed it on to my father, who also passed it on to me. And, you know, I remember waking up with, you know, him and having Rai on Cablevision on Dish Network. And, you know, that 110p, however you want to look at it, was like the worst picture you could ever see. And waking up early to spend time with my father to watch, you know, his favorite team that I eventually fell in love with. And I remember one game in particular where, you know, at the time, my favorite player was Roberto Baggio, and getting to see him, you know, be substituted on. I want to say it was against Genoa. I could be wrong, but I'd have to, I guess I could double check. But, and he came on, scored two quick goals, and Inter ended up winning the game. And I think that was like when I truly, truly like fell in love with the club and have been all in ever since. You know, it's, I don't think that I'll ever not support Inter. I think there's times where the other teams that I support push me to the brink of just not wanting to watch them anymore. you know, that'll never be the case with Inter. And, you know, having them, you know, tattooed on my body, it's not because of anything other than I love this club so much. It's like embedded in my DNA somehow. And I can never, ever, you know, not want to be there watching them, you know, if I can. I plan my weekends around them, although yesterday was a little harder, but it's such an amazing thing, and I hope to one day, you know, be able to share that with my own kids. So
yeah, it's an obsession, oftentimes an unhealthy obsession, but an obsession nonetheless. And yeah, I mean, obviously we do this podcast week in and week out, and it's fun, and sometimes it's difficult, but at the end of the day, it's you know, we love this club and it's like family. And I'm sure that's how a lot of you guys feel as well. We'll read some of these stories at the end of the pod. I think let's go ahead and get into the meat and potatoes of why we are here, which is to recap an important game, league leaders versus last place in the league. A game where coming out with anything less than 3 points would be criminal. And for a period of time, for a lot of Interisti, not necessarily myself or Gianni. Napoli just took the lead against Fiorentina. For a period of time, it looked like we may not be able to.
Wait, Napoli just what? Sorry.
They just scored against Fiorentina, Lukaku.
Okay.
26 minutes in. It looked like Inter may not make the comeback, but ultimately that Pazza Inter DNA kicks in and we're able to get the victory. So, Johnny, to kick this thing off, first question to you. At any point in time yesterday, did you have doubt that Inter would be able to pull that off?
Honestly, no. Monza are a terrible team. I know people were freaking out about it. It was good that I was distracted with a lot of stuff for work yesterday. If I had been watching it, maybe I would have felt a little bit differently. I didn't see all of it. I did see from the second Monza goal on. But, you know, I was just like, hey, this is the kind of stuff that can happen throughout a season. You're not going to play your best every game. And I think we as fans struggle to recognize that. I think we expect every year to be 38-0, and I think that's kind of crazy. But I never doubted it. I was like, we have so much more quality starting on the bench than they do. We could go down 2-0, and I was like, we can get this back. I mean, it did help that we got a quick goal right back from Arnautovic. I think that makes it obviously a little bit easier to feel that sense of confidence. But I honestly was not concerned with not being able to pull out the win there.
Yeah, I wasn't worried. I wasn't panicking. I didn't want to open Twitter because I didn't want to see everyone else panicking and kind of get myself all heated. But I coming into the game, I think the expectation that was that we were going to score 2 or 3 goals. That second Monza goal just made it that we had to score 3 goals. I wasn't too nervous about it. The flow of the game, it was very clear that either were superior, that they weren't going to struggle to create chances. And I felt very confident that we were going to get our lick back there. Even on the goals that were against us, really stupid and, in my opinion, individual mistakes. You know what? Actually, why don't we go there? So the two goals that Monza scored, Birindelli with the opener, which was a classic counterattack, where in my opinion, De Vrij is at fault. Because he kind of got spun there with the back heel that released the Birindelli, who puts it in the back of the net. And then for the second goal, Pavard is just inviting Keita to come at him, not really putting any pressure on him. And it's not like Keita Balde is a terrific player anymore, but he was always technically pretty good. And like, if you're going to give him a shot he's going to take it, and there's a chance that he'll be able to do something with it. So for me, it was two individual errors. Did you see it differently?
I mean, on the second goal, I think the turnover from Mkhitaryan is what led to it being that even opportunity to begin with. DeVry, 100% I blame for the first one, just getting turned like that. Also getting caught flat-footed. Like, he kind of came to Danny Mota on it, and then he did that amazing back heel to Birindelli. Once you're caught as a defender flat-footed and you have to turn, you will never make up the ground. It doesn't matter how fast you are. You're just going to be caught in trouble. Pavard, maybe it's me as a fan who thinks, like, you should know what foot is the dominant foot for a player. If you see Keita Balde dribbling at you in that situation, you know he's not going to want to take it wide with his left and try to cross it in. You know he's going to want to get it down to his right, whether it is to shoot or pass. So I think when he opens himself up and allows himself to get beat onto his right foot, you know, that's not so great. But I think it all starts with the turnover in the midfield, you know, and Average Joe even said it first, like, as well, almost like, you know, like, what were you thinking there with Mkhitaryan? And I feel like I asked that question to him maybe twice a game, to be honest. So
yeah.
Yeah, Pavard it makes a mistake there too, but does that mistake happen if the first one doesn't take place? I don't know. I you could equally blame both, but I'm more on the side that the turnover by Mickey is what leads to the second one, whereas, you know, you could totally blame DeVry for the first one.
Yeah, it's they're just all individual mistakes. Like, with DeVry, yeah, if you're going to step to the ball, you either need to foul him or get the ball, especially, yeah, when you have two men coming at you. It's like, if all he needs to do is get a touch on it, and he sends you know, the runner free. So if you're going to step to the ball, something needs to happen, whether it is you're stopping play by fouling them or you're getting the ball. So there's that. There's the turnover from Mkhitaryan. Pavard, you're giving him way too much space. This is like a professional player. Like, you can't just dare him to do that. It's like, you know, in the NBA, if you're just daring someone to take the three because you think that they're a poor shooter, like, sometimes they're going to hit it. And Keita Balde is not even a poor shooter. So as far as the individual mistakes are concerned, so far this season, it seems to have come against these sides that, you know, we should be beating and we shouldn't be making these mistakes against. Was this just a continuation of what seems to be an Inter that comes into games where they're supposed to win with a little bit of arrogance, a little bit of overconfidence, a little bit of, like, maybe on an individual level or even a team level, not taking their opponents as seriously as they should be? And even, you know, Çalhanoğlu did mention in his post game, he did make a point to say we have to take everybody serious.
You know, that's tough for me to answer, only because it's like, I can't really get obviously into their mentality or what they're thinking or what they're, you know, is going through their minds. It's possible that, yeah, that they're just like, we're gonna coast through this. We're fine. We have the advantage in quality and talent. Like, we should be able to beat them, no problem. But, like, I feel like we say this all the time, top to bottom, any team in Serie A can beat any team. Like, I feel like you have to be aware and be ready for every team to give you their best shot, because, you know, not for nothing, they are in Monza, I mean, they are trying not to get relegated. I mean, I think it's almost pretty much a done deal, but 3 points would have been huge for them to potentially crawl their way out of it. And I think if you have a win of that magnitude, that can, you know, push you forward with 10 games left and to maybe, you know, just save yourself. I don't think Inzaghi is not getting the guys ready by any means. I think that he knows the importance of every match, and it's like the last, let's say, well, 11 including yesterday matches are all kind of cup finals. Like, if we want to win this, the Scudetto, each one of these games is essentially a cup final. Like, Napoli maybe has two games left, and if I'm not mistaken, they're, one is today with Fiorentina, which they're already winning, and Bologna might be the only other game that, Milan too, actually, but, you know, if it wasn't for, you know, absolute luck against Lecce, they probably should have lost that as well, so... but I guess you could make the same argument for us. But anyway, you know, it's important for us to get 3 points from all these matches that are left, and if we want to win our 21st Scudetto. So it could be a little bit of a sense of, I don't want to say entitlement, or I don't even know what the other right word might be, but Inter might be, yeah, they might be a little bit comfortable with what's going on in their own season, and I think that needs to stop if they really want to be champions again.
I think you have nailed a few things here. So the first is regarding Inzaghi's role. You see how animated he is. You see the way he talks in the press conference. Like, I don't think it's a matter of he's not preparing them from a mental standpoint. I think the other thing that you said, there's a level of comfort when they're on the pitch, you're 15 minutes into the game, you're dominating them. You have a feel of like, okay, I don't feel really threatened by this team. Like, we're creating chances. Like, we're, you know, if you're a player on the pitch, like, you might get a feeling of superiority because you are. Like, you're looking around and you're seeing Armando Izzo, but to your left it's Alessandro Bastoni. It's like, okay, you know, we're gonna pull through here. And then all of a sudden you drop your level a little bit, and like you said, the other thing that I completely agree with you on is any team can beat any team. And I don't think there was a more obvious example of the different ways that teams can beat each other, even if you're the last place team versus the first place team, of like, you capitalize on a couple individual mistakes. And then I really want to get into this with you because I'm positive you're going to have some thoughts here. And then after you capitalize, you start to play a game of ultimate shithousery, where you, for every single duel that Monza and Inter engaged in, you weren't even getting Monza players engaging in duels anymore. Now they just decided that if there was any sort of contact, and remember people, this is a contact sport, they were going down like they were shot. And if you have a 2-0 lead or 2-1 lead, and you're a team that's not really going to create any opportunities, you're eating clock, you're frustrating the opposition, you're maybe getting in the referee's head that Inter is playing too rough, whatever it is. That is a path to victory for some of these smaller teams. And the lack of, like, Monza is going down 95% chance. The lack of, like, dignity, or I don't even know the right word. The fact that they were just going with the strategy of every single time an Inter player comes in with their shoulder or with anything, normal actions within a football game, we are going down like a ton of bricks here. It was embarrassing.
Yeah, it was absolutely disgusting from Monza, the amount of diving that they were doing. And there was one, I forget who it was now, I think it would have been, what is it, Bianco or something, on the edge of the box in their own half, where Lautaro comes in to try to get the ball back, and he just trips over air and acts like you said, you know, like he got shot, and a foul was awarded. And I think the ball was recovered by Inter. Like, Lautaro pressured him. He goes over, Hakan recovers the ball and starts, you know, pushing into their 18, and then the whistle's blown. It was repeated. We knew, I think anyone would know that was going to be their game. You know, they have a 2, or not at that point, it was a 2-1 lead. They're going to want to hang on to it by any means necessary. I'm going to assume that's obviously instructed by Nesta to try to, you know, run the clock out, like you said, try to, I forgot where I was going with that. Run the clock out, like you said.
I don't even. Go ahead.
Sorry. No. I was going to say try to just shit house their way to the win, because they desperately needed 3 points, and you were, you know, by any means necessary, right? You're going to try to get all three. So, disappointing, but also I understand it. I would not want my team to play like that if we needed to run out of game, but that's just me personally.
Even if Nesta was instructing Monza, like, this is the way to play, like, I don't necessarily really blame them. If that's your path to victory, that's your path to victory and you're fighting for your life, like, fine, it is what it is. Who I blame the most is the referees in this situation, of not being able to understand the nuance of the situation, understand, you know, what you're dealing with on the pitch. Be real. Like, if two players are about to have a duel, like if it's a ball coming down in the air, if one player is engaging for the ball, right, they're bracing themselves to make contact with the shoulder, like how football is traditionally played, and the other player is not even going to attempt to engage, they're just going to let themselves get hit for the sake of falling on the floor to get the foul, it's like, we shouldn't be rewarding that. If you're a referee and we're supposed to be having a football match, like let's have a match. If you're not engaging in the duel, I'm not going to reward you with a foul. I'm just not going to do it. And I feel like there's some responsibility on the referees to understand. Like I understand the position that Monza is in. I get what they're doing, but we also have to have a game of football. So you guys got to stop with the flopping and let's play. Like, try to make something happen. I'm not going to keep giving you every single, you know, ticky-tack foul. And it's not even like Inter was really fouling in the situations. They were just engaging their opponent, and their opponents weren't engaging back. So it looks a lot rougher, but typically those are pretty simple. It was super, super frustrating. But on the you know, topic of the Monza shithousery and the refereeing here, what did you make of the referee yesterday? Obviously had a problem with Monza, you know, letting Monza get away with a lot of these fouls. Lautaro disallowed goal in the first half. Dumfries potential penalty shout in the first half. The slowness to go to his wristband on Inter's third goal, which crossed the line. There were a few things which seemed, you know, not great. But what were your thoughts on the overall officiating?
Yeah, not good. Allowing Monza to dictate a lot of the game and the pace of it with the, like we've just said, with the fouling and the non-contact nonsense. And I don't understand how the Lautaro goal was disallowed. I've watched it multiple times, over and over again, and I just don't see where it hits his hand. It always looks like it kind of hits his thigh and goes off his chest, and I'd love to know where they see that and what exactly it is that forced him to change the goal there. The Dumfries one, to me, coin flip. I'm not going to really get too upset with that one. And then when it comes to, what was the third thing you mentioned?
It was the when Inter got their third, that like typically what we've been told is that it's instantaneous on the wrist. And but he didn't go to his wrist until like 15 seconds or 20 seconds had passed.
Now, does it just alert them or does it, I honestly don't know, or does it vibrate?
I don't know.
I would hope that they would have the technology where you could like vibrate and kind of alert them, like, hey, goal, you know, like let them, so that makes them look at it.
Yeah.
If you have players running to you, my first thought personally is not to go, hold on, like, let me see if that was a goal. Like, that's the only thing I'll give them a little break on.
That's the situation that I could see having played out, where it's like Durati makes a save. And I think the linesman signaled for a corner. So let's say it comes up on the wrist and it doesn't vibrate. It's like, as the referee, you're just going along. Until Correa comes up to the ref and thank God for Joaquin, where he's like, check the wrist. And he does check the wrist. And, you know, it's a goal. And we see the images, right? So it yeah. was a goal. There's no controversy there. But I thought that it was a little bit slow. And I don't know that he's the most experienced ref to begin with.
Yeah, I think for me, this is the first time I've seen him ref. But obviously, I'm mostly watching Inter games. So it's not like I've ever seen him do many other ones. And if, you know, if it's games I have seen, I wouldn't know if he was even a part of them. So it's... I'll give him a little bit of a break on the third one. You know, that's always going to be tough when people are running at you. You're going to look at them first. And like you said, thank goodness for Joaquin Correa, because we don't want... it would have been a terrible way to end with 1 point had we not even, you know, gone to check the wrist. But I think eventually he would have had to anyway. But anyway.
Yeah. I agree with you on the Dumfries first half shout for the penalty, like 50-50, maybe leaning towards it. You know, it's just a tussle in the middle. I believe with the Lautaro thing, they are saying that it touched the tips of his fingers as it was coming back up, which he denies that ever took place. With the video, like, I don't know. I don't know that there's a major change of direction there, but if you want to, I'm not really going to argue about it. There's idiots that are on Twitter right now posting, like, Lautaro had fouled Kyriakopoulos in the third goal. Like, the only thing I have to say to you is go show that video to your father, your grandfather, whoever got you into the sport, and ask them if they think that's a foul. Because they would be embarrassed of you for thinking that's a foul. Okay? This is not like VAR and the age of complaining about referees. You're turning this game into the softest game of all time. We have to be able to challenge for stuff. There has to be some sort of physical contact. Like, stop doing this. Go ask your dad and look at the look on his face that he gives you when you try to argue that that's a foul. Embarrassing.
Yeah, and I was gonna say, like, in regards to the Dumfries penalty, no penalty, not every contact in the box is an automatic penalty. Like, we need to stop that. I don't care who you're a fan of, whether it's Inter, Milan, Napoli, Juve, whatever. Like, we, just because a guy gets bowled over or gets, you know, goes down in the box, does not automatically mean, oh, scream for a pen. Like, that's it. Sometimes it's just a clean shoulder to shoulder. Sometimes the player, like Monza would have been doing, like, tries to just go over and get a cheap one. You know, like, there was times where even, you know, last season, I remember more specifically than this season seeing it, but Thuram would go down very easily in the box, you know, and I was like,
just thinking the same thing.
Like, it would bother me sometimes, because in my mind, it's like, if I'm a ref and I see that you're going down easily, then when you actually get fouled, I may not actually call it a pen and would have to, you know, hope that VAR intervenes to fix that wrong. But it's like, you need to only do it when there's actual fouls, you know. Like,
yeah, I agree.
That's where I'm at.
You, a little sidebar here. Do you agree that growing up, after a game, you used to see a lot more like bloody knees, ripped jerseys, you know, people used to get like their head bandages on and stuff like that. Like, I remember growing up watching games where at the end of it, it looked like these guys had been battling. Like, you don't really see that anymore. I think this season, the only one that I can really remember, actually, Bastoni had the stitches, and then Lautaro when he got clattered into by Ishmaili. But you rarely ever see like dirty jerseys, ripped jerseys. Like, I don't know. I there's a part of me that almost is longing for a little bit more fight and a little bit leniency from the referees.
Yeah, no, it's funny. I was even, not so much that specifically, but I was talking about it with my dad. Like, I remember more head injuries or head cuts Like you would see, you know,
the wraps
on so many players. Well, it was always insane. Like just being aggressive, going up in the air hard, like trying to clear balls and not being afraid of any challenges when the ball's in the air. Like now it's almost like people shy away from the contact as if, listen, I get head injuries are a scary thing. You don't want to have something, you know, traumatic happen or something, you know, like look what happened with like Kivu. Like that was a scary instance. But it also didn't prevent him from going back up. I mean, yeah, he wore like the head guard, but it didn't stop him from playing as hard as he was playing before that. Whereas now I feel like guys are more, I don't want to say in tune with their body or how their body would react to certain contacts, but it just feels like the game has gotten a little bit softer. Not in such a negative way, but it's like a little bit, you know, you see that guys aren't going as hard as they would have in, you know, even 10 years ago.
They're more willing to, like, to what we were talking about earlier, instead of just going into the challenge with the intention to win it. Now it's like players are going into challenges with the intention to make it look like they got fouled. They're trying to earn a foul as opposed to trying to win a challenge, which I just think is really embarrassing, and it doesn't make for, obviously it's strategic, but it doesn't make for a really good product. All right, I want to talk about a lot of these players, but let's just touch on two other things that I had here in my notes here. Results from the other Champions League competitors from the midweek. All the German teams lost at home. Liverpool was losing to Southampton. I think they had to get a penalty and an own goal in order to get past them. And obviously we saw what happened with Inter going 2-0 down, although I would argue that that had nothing to do with the flow of the game and had more to do with individual mistakes. Should we be giving more credit to Inter for looking this good coming off the midweek compared to their peers that are also competing in the Champions League? Or it's Monza, it doesn't matter, it is what it is, move on.
I'll say it's great that the fight that they had to come back from 2-0 down, but it's also like, it's Monza, it doesn't matter. You had to get 3 points regardless, I didn't care how ugly it was. The Leverkusen lost to Werder Bremen. Yikes, because if I'm not mistaken, like, and I saw the highlights and I saw the stats from that. Werder Bremen only had 23% possession.
Yeah.
Like, if we lost a game where we dominated that much in possession and had more, I want to say it was like 9-2 shots on target, I don't know what I'd be saying on this podcast. And Bayern, who they lose to? Bochum, right? Is that?
Yeah.
Is there a more, I don't know what the word would be. confusing manager than Vincent Kompany right now in the world. Like, sometimes they look amazing, and then other times they look absolutely atrocious. I don't get him. I don't get their I don't even think the players understand his tactics or what's expected, to be honest.
The two things on the German teams who it's relevant to talk about, because either one of them is potentially, if we get past Feyenoord, you know, potentially our next Champions League opponent.
Don't say if, when. When we get past.
Knocking on wood. Everyone can see me knocking on wood here.
I'm saying when.
You worry me. You know I'm superstitious. What was I saying? Leverkusen. So the biggest thing from that game, not that they have a major chance of coming back in that Champions League tie, but it looks like Wirtz picked up an injury. Should I say Wirtz or Wirtz? Like how they say it. How do you say it? Florian Wirtz?
I've always said Florian Wirtz, but...
Florian Wirtz, yeah. So he picked up
a wrong.
I could be too. Doesn't look good. It didn't look good at all. I haven't checked in on an update on that, but that would be very, very significant for Bayern moving forward. And then Bayern, the post... Robben and Ribery Bayern, this post, you know, where they were a dominant team in Europe, they're still a dominant team, but it does feel like every season since that generation has moved on,
they lose the weirdest games. They lose games that they have no business losing, which, you know, not like Inter is also immune to doing that, but that's just something that I've definitely noticed from this new generation at Bayern Munich. All right, let's get into these players, because there's a lot of performances that we need to talk about. Why don't we start, quick one off the bat, Zielinski, 3 minutes total on the pitch, looked like, you know what it reminded me of? Rodgers, like where it's a non-contact injury and he goes down immediately. It doesn't look good. Usually non-contact injuries are accompanied by a pretty long layoff.
Months.
Give me your initial feeling on what the Zielinski injury could mean for this team moving forward.
It means we're fucked. Like, that's how I feel. Like, if Fratesi and Aslani are your options off the bench, because you know Mkhitaryan is starting every game with Hakan and Barella, yikes. There is no quality coming off the bench in the midfield. I don't care how you feel. I know people are big fans of Aslani or even Fratesi, but my goodness, like, if I have to see those guys come on and be like, you're chasing the game, you need a goal, like, holy shit, man, like, that's rough. I'm not a big fan of, you know, the players that would potentially come on, and I feel like it was pretty telling. I don't know what you thought, but that he called on Correa over,
I was just going to ask you this, yeah,
those two midfielders, right? Like, I think he may have lost all confidence in both of them. Maybe I'm reading into it too much. Maybe it's nothing that serious. But if you're going to call Joaquin Correa first to fill in, you are really fucking up.
Which it could mean multiple, that Correa substitution could mean a few things. I mean, understand why he went to Correa over Fratesi. As much as this is crazy to say, because one's a midfielder and one's a forward, you have more control with Correa on the pitch than you do with Fratesi. Correa actually can recycle the ball in possession more effectively than Fratesi can. So there's that. There's also the element of, like, am I more confident in a 3-4-3 than I am in a 3-5-2 with Fratesi or Aslani coming off the bench? There could be that. Or just straight up, what a lot of people are talking about is, like, can you just put Correa at Metzala? If you're not necessarily expecting him to do much from a defensive standpoint, but if you could have him occupy passing lanes, right? If you could teach him to just step in and, you know, press at the right time. Not that this is easy, like off the top of your head, you're gonna do this, but if you can teach him to press a little bit and occupy the right zones, and he can retain possession and or find an incisive pass better than these other guys, like, is he a Metzala option all of a sudden?
I guess. I mean, when things like this happen where you have to kind of, like, throw whatever's out there on the pitch and see if it sticks kind of thing, like, yeah, I guess it might be our best option moving forward, which is kind of crazy to think about. I know I'm going to be saying this till I'm blue in the face and it's never going to happen, but I would love to see some of these young Primavera kids that we are seeing scoring bangers and having promise, whether it's Topalovic or Barenbrook, really. Why not against the smaller Serie A sides give them a shot? You know how important it is to compete on all three fronts. Inzaghi said it himself. Like, why not let a Topalovic play and rest Mkhitaryan one game? And then if you need to throw him on there, he's available. Like, I want it to be a breaking case of emergency type situation. Not something where you have to run and play these guys. We are trying to win a treble. It's still right there in front of us. You know, Mourinho, when he had to play Alan Stevanovic. Do you remember Alan Stevanovic? Does anybody really remember Alan Stevanovic? Did he go on to have some massive career, whether it was in Inter or other teams' colors? Absolutely not. So it's like, why can't we let a guy like Topalovic have a shot? Or a Barenbrook? Like, I don't get it. I wish I knew. But I will give Mourinho credit for that. Because I'll never forget, there was a game where it was the Siena game, where we were down, came back and won 4-3, and Stevanovic was there celebrating, you know, with Schneider, the goals that he scored from free kicks. So I feel like you have to, once or twice, I'm not saying the whole season, but lean on some of these, you know, Primavera kids to come up in moments for you.
I just had to look it up, but I remembered it correctly. Mourinho also gave Santon his debut.
Yeah.
Which, you know, he ended up pocketing Ronaldo for the most famous performance he'll be known for. But yeah, this discussion is almost, I agree, I would love to see the guys, but it's almost like not very fruitful because Inzaghi's never going to do it. It's just not his thing. Whether, you know, we can definitely criticize him for it. Absolutely can criticize him for it. It can make you think about long term, how long can the relationship between Inzaghi and Oaktree last, depending on how long Oaktree is the owner. Because they want to get younger, and Inzaghi doesn't mind experience. It's not that he doesn't mind experience. He favors experience. You even saw Onana giving an interview where Inzaghi told him, like, Handanovic is my number one. And a real change wasn't started until the rest of the squad spoke up about it. That isn't a super great look for Inzaghi, I'll be honest. There's loyalty, but if it's to a fault where it's obvious that it's hurting your team,
But it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to me because it's like you played Keita Balde. You allowed him to grow. You allowed Sergei Milinkovic-Savic to grow. Like, you allowed young players to step in and develop. Why is it different at Inter? Is that instruction from management? I don't know. I wouldn't assume it is because we're a club that's like short on funds. So to go out and buy experienced players is not really a reality. So why wouldn't you give young guys a shot? Like, he did give Mike Aidu, you know, what, 5-10 minutes? And I forget now if it was a Coppa Italia game or if it was a Champions League game.
Coppa Italia.
It was Coppa Italia? Okay. You're going to tell me you can't let, like, these two stud, talented midfielders who look like they could be, like, a real player there, an opportunity? I don't know. I do know there was instances, too, at Lazio where he wouldn't play certain young players, whether it was, like, I don't know if you remember, but Pedro Neto was at Lazio. Couldn't get a sniff of the field. Ended up going to Wolves and becoming this, like, you know, pretty solid winger. Now he's at Chelsea and you know. Chelsea's
like
kind of
million transfer or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and Chelsea just ruins everybody and makes them look absolutely average. But you needed a winger. You're not playing a winger. It made no sense to me. But yeah, that's the frustration with him, right? And now, you know, I think Koki was on, you know, the bench. We'll probably never see him either. They're just there to kind of chill vibes.
And it's not like the Primavera squad is a very good team. Like, they're doing extremely well.
We're smoking teams.
Yeah, they know how to play within the structure of a team. De Pieri, when he made his debut against Monaco, just the confidence to have that drop of the shoulder to beat up Champions League, even though Monaco's team is fairly young, and I don't remember exactly who he fooled there, but the confidence to do it and take on that shot. Yeah, you'd love to. This is a thing with fans, no matter what your team is, you always love when an academy player comes through, and you always have this hope of, like, you're going to get this Derek Jeter or this Javier Zanetti or whatever it is, where you have a bandiera for the rest of your, you know, your time watching the team. But yeah, it's not Inzaghi's forte. Let's say that someone whose forte does not seem to be playing football, Mkhitaryan, seems to be entering his bidone phase. One of the most divisive players for Interisti for the past several years. He's had performances where he looks like he is the glue that keeps this team ticking. Everyone has seen the arguments of how important he is for this team. Obviously, Inzaghi would agree with you, given the faith that he has in him. But just talking about yesterday, after getting a chance to get off your feet and get some rest, I'm not a professional player. I don't know how long it takes for you to get your legs back. This is not, like, I don't want to say anything that is out of turn for the sake of just having a take or whatever. But the performance, he was keeping Monza alive with the amount of times he was giving the ball away to them. It's really disappointing. With Zielinski going down, it becomes even more of a worry if he's not going to get back to being at least serviceable. Because that was a really, really poor performance from Mkhitaryan last night.
Listen, I'm not a fan of his. I wasn't excited when we signed him. I just don't get why he's so heavily regarded by some in our fan base. And they talk about him. You know, one account in particular said that he's a club legend. To me, that's insane. He's not, like,
he's not
club
a legend.
Legend.
A club. No.
If you're going to say he's a club legend, Jason Murillo is a club legend then too. You know, Freddy Garin is a club legend then too. You know, that. Where does it stop? Where, like, seriously? You could literally then look across our entire team and say, oh, all of them, club legends. I try to be club legend.
We have to have a higher threshold.
You have to.
Things, guys. Come on.
We throw the word legend around so cavalier-like, it's insane. Has he had moments? Has he been a serviceable player? Absolutely. But, like, do I think that we should throw him in that? No. And again, like so many other times this season, a bad performance, bad turnovers, bad decision making, lacking, you know, situational awareness or even awareness around. Like, I don't get it. I don't. I never will. You know, some people like to say, oh, another, like, I one guy said, oh, such an American take for Mkhitaryan.
What does that even mean?
I was like, so only Americans have a problem with Mkhitaryan? Nobody else? Nobody. It's I don't know. I get so frustrated with it to the point where now it's like I might not even say anything about Mickey anymore. Like, I'll just keep to myself.
I
know he sucks. If you can't see it, then maybe you're just a fan of the player and not a fan of the team.
Or what I think it is that there is this perception of the unsung hero, or this idea of the unsung hero, where, yeah, he doesn't do all the pretty things, but he does a lot of, you know, the things that don't show up on the stat sheet, or, you know, all the running that he does, whatever it is. You create this narrative of, like, in a team that has so many players that are outstanding, like Bastoni or Barella or Lautaro, that do outstanding things, we need to show appreciation for the guys that do the mop-up work because they allow the rest of it to flow. I understand that. I think there is a lot of merit to that. But guys, he hasn't even been that. He hasn't even been that. Part of this, like, he does the unspectacular things that keep the, you know, the team ticking. That doesn't include five consecutive giveaways in the second half against the bottom place team in the league, where he just kept giving them the ball. I appreciate everything Mkhitaryan has done, but if you're not of the mindset of starting to think of a succession plan for a 36-year-old who increasingly looks like he's 36, you're in a different reality, man. It's not being overly critical to discuss these things are playing out in front of our eyes. We're all seeing it. I can't remember the last time he made the kind of impact that would fall under the narrative that people seem to really have about him.
I mean, for me, it goes back to last season, the match he had against Milan. I can't remember like a game where he had a level of impact like that, even close. That's just me. And you know, people are like, oh, he completed 86% of his passes. Okay, but look at the ones he didn't complete. And what they led to.
Yeah.
They are attacking third level, you know, just ends it. It ends it in the attacking third, you know, his turnovers. One of them led to a goal. But hey, 86% completion on his passing. Like, look at that. That's a great number. Okay, cool. But it cost us a goal. One of those misplayed passes. And yeah. I feel like his thought process is severely lacking right now. I don't know.
Yeah, listen. If Inzaghi is on this team next year, then Mkhitaryan will be on this team next year. He's not going to agree to any type of moving off of him. So we are in for. If you want Inzaghi to be our coach next year, you're going to have Mkhitaryan on the team and he's going to get used. And that's just a fact of life that I think everyone needs to come to terms with. But ultimately, succession plan has got to be thought of at this point in time. All right, let's talk about a performance that I really, really liked yesterday. It's giving me a lot of, as they say in Italian, fiducia, faith. That this player can have the sort of impact that we desperately need him to have for the rest of the season. Hakan Çalhanoğlu was terrific yesterday. Before the match, did an interview, said that he could barely walk coming into the Napoli game, that he's been carrying injuries that he's never had for his career, which, you know, for the crowd that wants to move off of him as soon as possible, understandable. Like, it's coming out of his mouth. But performances like what we saw yesterday are the reason why that feels like such a risky proposition, because, you know, even though he wasn't great in the first half, in the second half he was, everything was ticking and he could have had multiple goals. The goal that he did score was as clean of a strike on the ball that you could possibly physically deliver. This Hakan changes the trajectory for what this team can be moving forward.
You know, I tweeted a few days ago about, you know, selling Hakan and finding his replacement and stuff like that. And I stressed it then that it has nothing to do with his level of quality. It's just his body. But yesterday, I was reminded, like, just how brilliant of a player he is. Impactful. And not just the goal. You could take away the goal. It was still, for me, like an 8 out of 10 performance. Like, pinging passes, great in defensive recovery, quick to, track back and assist the back line, which I think is so underrated in his game, his ability to really be, like, an additional line of defense, really, for that back three that allows them to to be a little bit more comfortable and kind of protected in that sense. So I love him. Yeah, my only knock on him is really health. That's the only thing I complain about when it comes to him. And even that is not really complaining. It's just a concern, you know. You see how guys get in their 30s, and if they start to deteriorate and start to show signs of wear, his value is his availability. When he's not there, we see how different this midfield is. We see how we struggle. I want him there, but I also I know that we need cover for him, because if he, God forbid, is hurt another time, let's say next season. What if it's, you know, 2-3 months that he's out or something like that? What are we doing for 8-12 games?
Yeah,
that could cost you a Scudetto. That's the level of importance he has on this team.
I think last year it might have been like a 2 or 3 week injury where he missed 4 or 5 games. This year, it's been multiple injuries and it's been lengthier injuries. So that's a cause for concern moving forward, without question. But on his day, the man is still one of the best midfielders in the world and an absolute joy to watch. And a super important part of this team. Another player who is increasingly becoming an important part of this team. The third most goal contributions for Inter in 2025 behind Dumfries and Lautaro. Would you believe it? Marko Arnautović just makes things happen as of recently. The Arnautović agenda is gaining a few more fans. The timing of his goal before the half was incredibly important to the result. The combination play, it looks so much better with him than it does with the other forward options that we have to go to. He attempts things. He does a flick or two. He tries to open things up in the combination play within the box. And he gives it all. We had problems with his body language in the past. That's not been the case recently. He is contributing. He does fade later in the game, but this was a good performance from Marko Arnautović, an encouraging performance. From Marco, what did you think of what is undoubtedly our third best striker on the team?
Man, it's awesome to see this, I don't want to say reclamation, but I guess rejuvenation of Marko Arnautović. And I saw an interesting stat that says that he has scored in every start of his so far this season except one, and it was the Red Star game. And he missed a penalty. So he could have literally had a goal in every game that he's started. It's not even a question anymore. He is the third best option. Like, if you told me, hey, we're going to rest Thuram, okay, start Marco. Like, I want him to start every game. Doesn't matter who his strike partner is, like whether it's Lautaro or Marcus, he's got to be the third guy. He's been awesome. The body language, like you said, has been positive. He works so hard for the team. And it's like, to me, it means something when you care about the colors. It's not just about yourself. To me, like if I was a player, I know I wouldn't be the most talented player on the team, but you better believe I would be giving it everything for these colors, because of just how much it means to me. And you could see that it means something to him. The way he celebrates, the passion he shares, and the way his teammates surround him and get excited for him. You know, as great as a goal scorer Icardi was, you would see sometimes guys wouldn't go over to celebrate with him, or it would be a very minimal, like whether it's a high five, a tap on the back, whatever, nothing crazy. These guys maul Marco. Just jump all over. They love him. So that's got to tell you something too. Whether you like him or not, his teammates love him. And that's awesome. Like, that means he's great in the locker room. That means he's encouraging, you know, Lautaro once said, I think it was last season, just some work that he saw him doing with one of the Primavera kids to help him with, I forget what it was exactly, but like he'll stay and do stuff to kind of help them lift their games, which you can't coach that. And you want those kinds of guys who are good for the environment, who are good for the morale. And even though, yeah, like he could throw his arms up when he, you know, makes a horrible miss and stuff like that. But Barella does it too, and we still love him. So like I hope that people reckon, I'm not saying that he's the best striker or that he is, you know, the most important, but he is a guy that you can rely on, and no matter what, the effort will be there.
People use the locker room impact guy against Arnautovic.
Yeah.
And then, which is, you know, I've seen it and at times I've done it, but then you see, you know, a season play out where difficulties arise, things happen, and all of a sudden the value of a guy that can bring up the spirit of a locker room, it starts to show itself. It starts to show itself. He said it in the post game. I don't care what it is, whether I'm on the pitch, whether I'm off the pitch, I'm always going to give my all for this team. Could there be a better guy for something like this to happen to, where he bookends his Inter career, starts and finishes with an achievement that I almost don't want to...
Don't say it.
I don't want to say it, but it would be an incredible story. This guy's easy to root for. I think he's going to continue to contribute. I really, really hope he's going to continue to contribute. Two players who obviously continued to show their worth for Inter in 2025, Dumfries and Lautaro, who I think you would put yesterday's performance up there as far as the hardworking performances of the year from both of those men. Dumfries has essentially become a cult hero, and Lautaro is the symbol of this Inter, you know, with his hard work, with his tracking back, with his will to make stuff happen. What did you think of those two players yesterday?
Look, I mean, Dumfries was never a player that I was high on, but this season he's finally turned it around and made me a true believer in what it is that he can bring to this team. The growth in his game, the really just tactical acumen too. You know, like I feel like he's even a much smarter player than he had been in the past. He knows when to go forward. He knows when to track back. He knows how to play the angles, which I think is important when you're a wing back. To be able to cut down angles on attacking players and stuff, and the hustle, you know, like that's, I feel like that's, you know, such a cliche thing, but he is a hard worker, and I love the way that he's grown. And then, you know, our captain, like you were saying, like he does lead by example, which I think is so important too, that you are able to inspire your teammates as well to put forth the same effort. And even though he didn't get in the score sheet yesterday, I mean, in my opinion, he should have had two goals. I feel like I wish, and you can call me crazy, like unless it's like an actual directly put in goal, like someone kicks it in themselves, I feel like soccer should have the same rules that the NHL has, where it's like, all right, yeah, I may not have scored it, but I was the last Inter player to touch it, then it's my goal. It doesn't go like as an own goal to whomever, because he, you know, with the way he performed yesterday, he deserved one. But I love the way these guys have played, and even though Lautaro hasn't had the best season, I think that he has recovered nicely in this second half since January and been able to kind of like just reaffirm that his stance in the squad and what he's able to provide, which is, you know, just as important as the goals that he does score.
For Lautaro, it looks different than it does at the than it did at the beginning of the season.
Without question.
He just looks, it's contributing at a level that we need. And then for Dumfries, like, is there a wingback
that you can consistently rely on to be a factor in the air more than Dumfries. The way that he got on the end of the ball from Mickey to lay it off to Arnautovic, they were looking for him at that back post all game. He just crashes the box, and that is a skill that, let's say, you know, you prefer your wingbacks to be more technical and to take their man on. He doesn't necessarily do that all the time, but, you know, deliver a cross and let's see what happens. Let's see how valuable that is. And he's been that for this team all year. All right, let's switch it up and go to a player who had a little bit of a down game. Actually, let's do two players that had a little bit of a down game. They both got subbed off at halftime. They both are at fault, made the mistakes, Benji Pavard and Stefan De Vrij. I'll put it in this context. How close are they to being pipped 100% officially by Bissek and Acerbi for their roles?
I don't think I would pip either, personally. De Vrij has been probably, in the defensive aspect of his game, the best guy all season, the most consistent guy all season. Bastoni, I think, has grown the most and shown, like, by absolute insane levels what he's able to do. But I don't know. I wouldn't knock De Vrij personally. Pavard, I feel like he's had a very up-and-down year. Some games he's looked brilliant. Some games he's looked very mediocre. I don't know what that is or what causes that with him. It's kind of confusing. I wouldn't say he's going to be pipped because Bissek has shown errors in his game. And even though he had a good one yesterday and had a great assist and had an amazingly funny post-match comment about why he didn't take the shot, and I love that answer. And I love him.
You've said that on this podcast so many times when talking about Dumfries, like, killing a fan.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I thought that was hilarious. And I think that he has more errors in his game defensively than Pavard does. So I don't see it happening. And I think, you know, although Acerbi has been solid, his age and his body concern me. So it's like, do you really want to risk it as well? I think that he'll get maybe some more starts moving forward, but I do think that you can't just totally abandon De Vrij and not rely on him, because there's going to come a time where you need to call on him and you're going to need him to be fresh and not just, like, you know, this rust bucket coming off the bench.
I think moving forward, if we are to continue our European adventure, I think it's going to be Acerbi and Pavard getting those starts, and then De Vrij, Bissek working in Serie A. And I think that would be appropriate.
Okay, yeah, I'm fine with that.
They both groups of players can do the job, but they just need to, you know, have their defined job and take it on. Sommer made the bench yesterday. Pep Martinez has been extremely good for this team. I think Sommer comes back as soon as possible. That's what Inzaghi wants. But there's also a part of me that thinks that this team might have a higher ceiling with Josep Martinez back there. What do you do? If Sommer is ready to start, let's say, against Feyenoord in midweek, where do you go?
What do I do, or what do I think is going to happen? Because it's two completely different things.
Give me both.
What I do is I stick with Josep Martinez. I think he is your goalkeeper for the future. As much as I love Jan Sommer, I do. And if anybody has loved Jan Sommer since he's signed, it's been me. I've been excited about him. I've thought his quality is phenomenal. I think both as a players. Pure...
You've been behind both players since the beginning.
Yeah. Like, so I it's not that I don't believe in Jan Sommer. But, like, you're going to have Josep going forward. I can hear the argument, too, though, that, like, this is, like, maybe Sommer's last ride. Like, let him have it. and let him, you know, finish it out and hopefully, you know, do something for us that, you know, hasn't happened in maybe 15 years. I wouldn't be mad if they went back to summer. Like, it's not something where I think that we're not playing the right person or not playing someone of quality. So I think Inzaghi is going to just go back to the guy that he believes in, that, you know, he knows is a veteran presence, knows what he brings, knows what he is, you know, is able to do out there. And I think that one thing that does play well for summer is he is more vocal. You do see Martinez, you know, yelling some orders, but I think Sommer is a much better communicator just from what I've seen on TV. Maybe it's wrong. And I think that does matter. And I think there's a level of comfortability with your defense when you have, you know, a loud voice and they kind of know, what's going on behind them and you know, that he'll, be able to get their attention or call them off when needed and alert them of danger from behind, whatever it is. So I think that is also a benefit in his pros and cons column. So I'm not going to be mad no matter what happens. I know, like, I would want, you know, Martinez so that he continues to build confidence and you know, shows what he's capable of with these colors. And he's been nothing short of amazing for us. So, you know, would we really be that upset if he does, you know, remain the starter? I don't think so. So I love Sommer. If we go back to him, I'll still be behind him 100% because, you know, he's been such a great keeper for us in his short tenure.
I think it's going to be a case of let's not overthink this. Sommer was our one coming into the season. He didn't do anything to lose his job. He got hurt. He's now able to play. So he's the one. And Josip came into the season as the two. He fulfilled his duty as the two. And this is a conversation we'll have in the summer. That's ultimately how I think it plays out. And that's how I think it should play out. Like, this isn't a Wally Pip situation. This isn't going to be... I don't even know the context behind... Do I even really know what I'm talking about when I say Wally Pip? I should probably...
I think Wally Pip was like a baseball player.
But was he hurt and that's what happened to him? Or was it form? Basically what I'm trying to say,
I think it was form, but
right. You think it was form?
Yeah.
I don't think it should be. He didn't lose it for form. He's ready to go and, you know, he should play. I don't think it has anything to do with Josip looking better than Sommer, although he's done some very interesting things. Let's just have this conversation in the summer.
Oh, okay. You want to know why Wally Pip is famous?
What is the deal there?
So Wally Pip was the first Yankee to lead the American League in home runs. Due to a minor injury, he was famously replaced by Lou Gehrig, and players began to say they were Wally Pipped when replaced in a lineup due to a minor injury. So it wasn't formed, but
so if Pep Martinez does become an icon, you know, and plays out the rest of the season, then Wally Pip would have been relevant.
Would have been the right. Yeah,
I don't think that is the case. So we are crushing this episode. We're about an hour and 15
Holy
minutes
cow.
Into it. I still have a bunch on my list to talk about.
Well, I'm exhausted, so yeah, we need to hurry up.
Let's move quick. All right.
But you East Coast people don't have to be up at 7 a.m. to record a podcast, okay?
I got my day going. Barella, a tale of two halves, not that great in the first. Second half really came on. For me, he is the player that needs rest more than anything. When do you get him some rest with Feyenoord and Atalanta coming up? Does he have to play those
Feyenoord.
Games?
No, he rests Feyenoord. Maybe you play him Atalanta, but you're up.
So who's your midfield for Feyenoord?
Who's your midfield for Feyenoord? Here it is. No one's going to like it. It's not going to happen. So I won't even say it. Mickey, Aslani, Fratesi.
Wow. You hate that midfield.
I hate it. I hate all three of them. But Hakan, I told you how important Hakan is. And worst case, let's say they score one, right? Let's say Feyenoord go up 1-0 at the San Siro. Well, then at least you have those guys that you're able to lean on in the second half and kind of restore order. But I think that they do need some level of rest, especially Barella, who is going to play like 87 games this season, it feels like. I'm not trying to kill our best player or my favorite player. I shouldn't even say he's our best player, but he's my favorite player. And Hakan is just getting back to form. Do you want to risk him picking up a knock against a Feyenoord team where you're up 2-0? I personally, I can't. Do I think Inzaghi is going to play one of the two? Yes. I would rather he didn't, but I think he is. It's a long season. We still got so many games left, potentially with Champions League and Coppa Italia. You know, like, I don't know. You need to rotate that midfield.
Yeah. Napoli is up 2-1 in the 77th minute against Fiorentina. That Atalanta game, you know, we'll see what they do against Juventus today. Very, very important game. Crucial, crucial game. Probably might be our toughest for the rest of the season in Serie A. Might. Now that I say that, might be. But yeah, let's see how it plays out. Give me a yes or no. Bastoni is Inter's player of the season after what's been an incredibly world-class week for him.
Yes. In the first half, I would have said Thuram. Thuram was in incredible form, and he was, yes, the MVP in the first half. Or, you know, and you could have said Di Marco even then as well. But Bastoni has been this way all season. Just phenomenal. And his defensive game, the growth, is a thing of beauty. Like, I have wanted him to be this level of a defender, not just a ball player, like actual defending. I don't think he gets the credit he deserves. And I've got no problem.
He is the best defender in the world.
Yes.
Without question.
I've got no problem saying that. And if you disagree, you're just either an Inter hater or you're just admitting openly that you don't know ball.
You're ignorant.
But like, the people who were saying Gvardiol was the next great thing, Kubarsi, like we saw what he did in the Champions League game. Kid got absolutely cooked and then committed a stupid foul.
Yeah,
like, stop. And people who are saying Calafiore because of the handsome tax, you could shut up too. Although Bastoni is the best. It's not even close. Not even close.
Agreed. Thuram missed a couple chances.
Execute him. No, I'm kidding. Wow. That second one that hit the post, yikes.
Bad.
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 Very bad. Not a miss you want to see.
Not going to get talked about because we won the game, but
it's not. But my gosh. If it was 2-2 and he missed that, I would be screaming about him. Screaming. And Marcus, I love you. I've got so many of your cards that are autographed because I think you're amazing. But my gosh, was that a bad miss. And again, you robbed Lautaro of getting on the stat sheet. It's insane. He should add.
And Bastoni. That was his back heel for that curling effort that went just around the post.
Yep. Wow. Yeah, that's not a good look, buddy. Right now, it's looking like Kepren's the better brother right now, wow. Which is not something I thought I would ever say. So
Wally pipped.
Oh, Ben, he's about to get Wally pipped, and I don't even know what else you could say, but yeah, not great.
Carlos Augusto, he had the cross to the back post that, whether you want to give it to Kiriakopoulos' own goal or Lautaro, I don't care, but he made an impact. My question to you is, over under 45 minutes against Feyenoord?
Over. He's starting.
He gets to start.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. I really like this player. Like, I just think he's the perfect squad piece.
He's such a solid player.
Solid. Yeah. It's like Darmian.
And again,
he doesn't have the versatility of Darmian, but he has the level of, like, you just feel safe.
And a player I wasn't excited about. Was never like pumped about the signing. I'm like, eh. Like, it was like, I was like, oh, it's not that big. It's not an upgrade on Gosens. I think in terms of defensive solidity, it is. He's like a big improvement on Gosens. I think I was just hoping that Gosens would turn good for us and was very excited for what he could be. And let me just say, this new hairline of Gosto, like, Carlos, buddy, the confidence is there too, man. Like, you know he dumped his girlfriend once he got the hair done and found himself a hotter girl in Milano. Like, congrats, man. You deserve it.
Oh, man. All right, last question on this game. And then I'm going to have to select a couple of the questions. I can't get to all of them because of timing here. Inzaghi throwing up the three fingers midweek. Post-game, he says it should have been four. Do you appreciate the mentality, or do you think there's an unnecessary target on our back with this kind of stuff?
No, I love the mentality. I think you're setting the tone for what's expected at this club. And this was something I used to get mad at when the first season under Inzaghi was Interisti saying, you know, I had a pretty famous Twitter Spaces argument with someone who was okay with top four and just a quarterfinals appearance. And I was like, that is not the standard I want at Inter. That is not how I ever wanted to be. I am never going to be okay with not winning titles. I want to go on a run that's like what Juve did, 9 Scudetti in a row. Like, I want that. If you don't want that, then I don't know what to tell. Then maybe you're just like a casual, you know, stick to,
what you
know.
Who gets tired after one? Who doesn't want another one? Back
who
to
doesn't
back?
Want, like, when we got 5 in a row, I was thrilled. Like, that's awesome. You know, you're winning 5 titles in a row. That is so much fun. I don't get it, that level of mentality, like, from certain fans. And I'm glad that he was like, yeah, 4. Like, I want 4. And let me tell you, with the now the prize for what the winner can get in the Club World Cup, $100 million, you better believe we're gonna go all out for that too. I thought we were gonna, like, you know, maybe coast. $100 million would be really nice for us. Like, do you can you imagine what we can do in the transfer market with $100 million? I know it's not all gonna go to transfers. I understand that, but we would definitely be selling some players and be able to bring plenty in. It would be awesome. Yeah. Oh, by the way, I need to say, I know I'm not trying to go off topic here, but since we're kind of talking about the Club World Cup as one of the 4 that we could potentially be going after, I got hooked up with tickets in LA. I won't be going to Seattle now, people. I'm sorry. But LA is going to be the vibe. We're going to play, I think, what is it, Monterrey in LA. If you can make the trip to LA, let's get together. Hang out, pregame, get dinner after, whatever. Let's do that. But anyway, I love the mentality from Inzaghi. I'm all for it.
I agree. And it's more so, like, we shouldn't care about a target. It shouldn't matter what anyone in the Italian media says during Domenica Sportiva. It doesn't matter what Gazzetta is saying. It doesn't matter what people are saying on Twitter. The only thing that matters is what the team feels when you send that message to them. And if they feel like they can push for everything, then that's the only thing that we care about. All right. So we're going to do one question because we pretty much answered everything else, and then respectfully going to run through the couple stories that got sent in to us. I thought this would be a nice idea, and I'm going to do my best to honor that, and I appreciate you guys doing that. All right, Peter Jordan, do you sit Lautaro in the Champions League midweek so he's rested for Atalanta? I do. I think you should be able to progress with Thuram. What, Arnautovic has given us 70 minutes yesterday or something like that. So
you want Taremi Thuram?
Yikes. So it's going to be Taremi Thuram. Yikes. I believe it's going to be Taremi Thuram.
Gross.
It is gross. It's disgusting. I feel gross even just saying it. So. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. That is probably what's going to happen. So.
Yeah. Okay. Let's, I'm going to go to very pissed off Inter fan. And I'm going to try to read this with as much honor and respect as possible. Talking about his story of how he became an Interista. Happy birthday, Inter.
it's really hard to pin the exact moment I became an Inter fan. I was essentially born into it. It would have been around 2003 when I saw my dad watching a replay of an Inter Champions League game. Against who? I got no idea, but I sat next to him watching this team in white with a black and blue sash across their chest on a rainy night, and my dad nervously on the edge of our couch cheering on every play. In that moment, I knew that this was my favorite team because it was my dad's favorite team. A few weeks later, he bought me my very first FIFA, FIFA 03, and once it was installed, I searched desperately for the team to play the team my dad liked. I couldn't find it because I couldn't remember what their name was. Luckily, my dad came over to help and said, look for the name Inter Milan. Sure enough, I did, and lo and behold, I saw for the very first time the blue and black stripe kit, which happened to be my two favorite colors, still are to this day, and so began the love story. This love was confirmed 2 years later when Oba, Cristian, and Alvaro brought Inter back from a certain loss at San Siro. Very important game for us here on the pod. Never in my life at that time had I seen something so incredible on the football pitch, and forever will I be blessed to have experienced that. There's no greater passion in my life. There's no greater love other than my wife. And there will never be another team like Inter. It's a love story which I will pass on to my future kids in hope they can experience that love for them too. Tutti insieme urliamo Inter Milano. Beautiful. So many overlaps with, I think, both of our stories, Johnny, in terms of having it being passed down with our dads, you know, in terms of like that game, the Martins Vieri and Recoba against Sampdoria game, which is the opening to our podcast. I think that's a lot like how a lot of people have become Interista. Sorry to say that correctly.
Let me read one from George Cordero here. We good?
Go. Are you gonna read it or you want me to read it?
No, I was gonna read this
you
one.
You got it. Go.
I got this one. Growing up, I was never into sports and had nobody to guide me in football. But in 2006, I was about 10 years old when I saw the World Cup for the first time, and I remember seeing Italy win it all. Fast forward to 2009, when my brother moved to the United States from Cuba and bought me my first ever FIFA. It was FIFA 10, and I had never had a sports game before, thinking they were lame. Being a Real Madrid fan, my brother told me to pick any team to play against him, and I went over to Italy, brushed through the teams, and saw Inter Milan, and picked them without knowing what the team was. I lost, but then he told me to put the controller down, turn on the TV, and make me watch a game. One game turned into two, two turned into three, and before I knew it, I had witnessed Inter win the treble that season. I quickly became an Inter fan after that season. Still, like I always tell everyone, that was the worst year to become an Inter fan because the banter era came soon after. You would have expected Inter to carry over the momentum for the next decade after such a historic season, but with age and Inter's financial troubles, it was hard to keep that team together. But like a true Interisti, you stick it through with loyalty, and we are now seeing Inter's best years to come. Happy birthday to Inter and all the fans who support the club worldwide. That's pretty cool.
Beautiful. It is pretty cool. There's a lot of different ways to get into being an Inter fan, whether it's passed on from family, whether it's just, you know, the team that you discovered through your love for football. But it is a special thing to be an Interista. To bleed black and blue. Obviously, you know, we just had a blast talking about them for an hour and a half. And yeah, love this club. Happy birthday, Inter. Anything for the listeners before we get on out of here and you can get your day going?
No, that is it.
That's it. We will see you midweek for Feyenoord. In the words of the great Roberto Scarpini, Forza ragazzi, Forza ragazzi, Forza ragazzi.